Welcome to The Beauty Scientists with Dr. Christy Hamilton and Dr. Roy Kim. Real beauty without the hype.
Hello, this is Dr. Roy Kim with The Beauty Scientists with my co-host, Dr. Christy Hamilton. How are you?
I'm great. How are you doing, Dr. Kim?
I am good. So today we wanted to talk about injectables, specifically neuromodulators and fillers. We wanted to do it in a very consumer-friendly style. It will be fairly comprehensive, like a light touch on all the major fillers and injectables in the United States. So to all the listeners out there, thanks for watching. And we'll get started with what exactly is a neuromodulator? So in case you don't know, neuromodulators are really given into muscles or areas of the face that have the muscle creating the wrinkle. If we inject some chemical where we can weaken the muscle, then it won't create the wrinkle. Classically, it's in the forehead, between the eyebrow, what we call the glabella area, in the crow's feet, just to the side of the eyes. And we can actually do cool little things with it, including change your eyebrow position a little. We can slim the width of your overall face in the masseters and actually help with TMJ or grinding of teeth. And there are a couple other fun things we can do. So, Dr. Hamilton, what are your favorite neuromodulators?
So I predominantly use Botox and Dysport in my practice. I feel like those are, Botox is the original. It's the one that most people come in asking for specifically. And then Dysport, I think, is another really great option. Maybe kicks in slightly faster and has great data behind it as well. So those are the two that I offer. And overall, the studies show that there's a fair amount of equivalence between those two, but I find that individually one patient may see more longevity with one or the other, or just like the look a little bit better. So I'll often encourage patients to try to switch at some point once we have their dose nailed down, and so they can see if they have a preference. What do you do?
I mean, my favorite is still Botox by Allergan. I do also like Xeomin and Dysport, which are similar in terms of injection, application, how long it lasts. I have used Daxxify. I haven't used it recently. I do think it lasts a little longer, but it probably doesn't last twice as long, so it's not worth double the price. Since they recently dropped the price, I may go back to that. And Jeuveau does work, but I don't think it lasts that long, and so I'm not a huge fan of that specific neuromodulator.
That's been my experience too. And so I feel like you see Jeuveau more in the med spa arena and perhaps less in physician offices. Just an observation I've noticed.
Yeah. And I do think, honestly, I don't think there's much of a difference between Botox and Xeomin. They're both great products.
Dr. Kim, I feel like there's a lot of misinformation about that out there too. Like, does your Botox, does it just disappear at month three or month four? What's happening?
Yeah, I think with Botox, with all the neuromodulators, they do dissipate. They sort of fade away over time. Everybody is a little different. The metabolism is different. So you may actually, as an individual, have a better reaction to one neuromodulator versus another. And I think that's highly individual. So what have you found?
So the way I explain it to patients is, so we know that these neurotoxins, neuromodulators, they go in, they block the connection between the nerve signal telling you to move the muscle in question and then the muscle that's actually making that contraction. So you can see I'm pregnant right now, so nothing is Botox. I can move everything very freely. So all those signals are going strongly to the muscle. When we inject the neuromodulators, we permanently block that muscle. And so patients ask, well, why doesn't my Botox last forever then? I was like, well, wouldn't that be great? But what happens is our bodies are really great at healing themselves. And so we grow new nerve endings back into the muscle. And so if you're a really great nerve grower and nerve healer, you may find that your Botox wears off a little bit faster. Conversely, if you're slower to grow those nerves back, you may see more longevity with it. And that's probably one of the reasons why people who are consistent and not microdosing their Botox seem to have better results over longer periods of time. So I encourage patients to be consistent.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. If you're coming in routinely every 3 to 4 months, then you're always making those muscles a little weaker. You're always knocking them down before they get too strong.
Yes. And so at this point, I started doing Botox when I, I flip between Botox and Dysport just depending on what's open at the end of the day. But I started doing Botox specifically when I was about 27 here or there. And so I credit that with why now, having not been Botox for the last 8 months, and I'm very excited to redo it. But I credit that with not having wrinkles at least at rest on my face right now, because I have that goodwill.
Yes. So obviously better skin quality helps, but you know, neuromodulators, Botox or equivalent,
and really
if you can,
yeah,
it makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. Years now. So I think one question I get asked often is, you know, really what's the difference between a neurotoxin and a filler? Why might I choose one versus the other?
Fillers do what they say, they fill. And as you know, if you have a static wrinkle, one that the wrinkle is always there, muscle's not creating the wrkle, muscle may deepen it, but the wrinkle's still there, even with a blank expression. Filler is really the best thing for it. The most common areas are the nasolabial fold, around the jowl, cheek enhancement, jawline enhancement or definition. Typically, Botox wouldn't work at all, and in fact, may not even be recommended, but fillers are really great for those areas. So the most popular fillers are HA fillers, or hyaluronic acid fillers, and they do have a couple other chemicals out there. Dr. Hamilton, do you have a preference for any type of filler, any special situation?
I do. I really preferentially use hyaluronic acid fillers just because they are dissolvable in the face, and I feel that's really important for a couple of reasons. One's just the safety factor, which we'll talk about. You know, you're listening to two board certified plastic surgeons who know facial anatomy really well talking about this topic. And even so, we have a lot of respect for blood vessels because people have aberrant anatomy or unusual anatomy sometimes. We know where blood vessels are placed in most people, but there are exceptions. And so I think it's really important that if you were to accidentally inject into a blood vessel, that you have the ability to reverse it. And then also just as time goes on, we do see some filler migration if this is something that you do year after year after year. And so sometimes it's nice to start over. And I think patients also like knowing that hyaluronic acid, this is a naturally occurring molecule. I have it in my body. Dr. Kim, you have it in yours. Anyone who's listening, you have it too. And it's just it's a natural plumper. It draws in water. It's a sugar molecule. And so that's the one I most commonly do in the face non-surgically. And my second favorite does require a small surgical procedure. But if patients need diffuse revolumization, I really love fat from your own body because that's the ultimate natural filler and plumper. What about you, Dr. Kim?
I totally agree with everything you said. Hyaluronic acid is natural. It's found in human bodies. It's in the joints and other areas. It can be melted, which is fantastic just in case you need to. And since we're real surgeons, fat is by far my technically favorite filler. But it does require a procedure, especially for newbies or for people who don't want a procedure. I wouldn't necessarily recommend, hey, let's do some fat harvesting and filtration and processing and fat grafting in an operating room setting to give you the best results. A lot of people don't want a procedure. There are other fillers. So they're different chemicals than HA. So do you have any preferences there?
So the other category of fillers that we often talk about are ones we put into the biostimulator category. So these are not ones that necessarily volumize themselves, but the goal is for them to induce collagen production. And so those can be really nice too for more like diffuse treatment, especially for skin quality as well. And so the most common ones are polyallactic acid, which is known as Sculptra. And then another common one is calcium hydroxyapatite, which is known as Radiesse. Finally, more into the autologous category, but also a little bit of a biostimulator, is Belafil, which I don't know if you've experienced with that one. That's not one I use in my practice.
I've used Belafil in the past. It's a PMMA microsphere. And don't ask me what PMMA stands for. I just remember the initials. And you have to allergy test for it. Once the patient passes the allergy test, it lasts for about 5 years. So it's a great, great filler. You just have to be very careful how you inject it because it does last 5 years and you can't get rid of it. You cannot melt it.
Yeah, the PMMA, polymethylmethacrylate, I think. And I agree. I think that's more of a, that's like your veteran patient coming in where you've been doing the same thing over and over again. And they're like, hey, I like seeing you, Dr. Kim, but maybe is there a more durable option? I already know that I like your work. But that's not usually like a introductory filler for most patients. So I also like will choose based on properties of them. Like if I'm really trying to sculpt a cheekbone or a jawline or do a non-surgical rhinoplasty, I want a really thick structural filler, like a denser a Juvederm or Restylane. And if I'm wanting to do some panfacial like collagen induction for someone, you know, who's maybe about to like hit 30 and just notes things don't look quite the same. That's a, I think a really great candidate for some diffuse Sculptra or hyperdilute Radiesse.
Yeah, those two things you just mentioned, Sculptra and Radiesse, I think they have more support, more structure, more oomph, if you will. Oh yeah, well, you know, HA is slightly biostimulatory, but it's not the same level. And technically, I think you do need a lot more of the robust HA fillers to get the same effect.
I agree with you. I think the biostimulators, they're more subtle. So if patients are coming in with like really deep folds, like really hollow cheeks. I think I'm usually counseling them towards doing some true volumization with filler and sculpting the face. And then maybe we're doing this the biostimulators more for skin quality. Or filling in like diffuse hollows underneath the cheekbones, where we're trying to do something that's a little bit less structural.
Yeah. And so for our listeners and viewers out there, even in the HA world, there are a couple of different brand names, including Juvederm, Restylane, Prollenium, RHA, Belotero, made by Merz. And they actually have different properties. So this is why they have different brand names. Juvederm, for example, that's the sort of overall family name. But there's Juvederm Volbella, Juvederm Volux, Juvederm Voluma, Juvederm L, I'm sorry, not L, Juvederm Ultra Plus. Restylane has Define, Refine, L, bunch of other names.
Kiss.
And the thinking behind it is they have different types of cross-linking, different types of support. So they're meant for different areas of the face. However, suddenly you have to maintain an inventory of like, I don't know, 15 different HA fillers if you want to really follow all of their suggestions. So anyway, Dr. Hamilton, I don't know if you have an opinion. Do you like to have every single type? Do you have your favorites that are more versatile when you inject patients with HA filler?
I have my favorites. I use Juvederm and Restylane hyaluronic acid fillers. I don't use Bellotero anymore because I just feel like it doesn't last quite as long as the other two. And then I have my favorites for like cheekbones, jawline versus nasolabial folds, and it depends on like how deep they are, what the patient's facial characteristics are. So I stock quite a few of them. I think a lot of them. Obviously, a lot of them overlap. And I like having just some different tools at my or different materials at my disposal so I can choose the right one for the patient. But to your point, I mean, originally there was Juvederm and Restylane, and we were placing it all over the face. So we're spoiled for choice now.
Yes. And then the other thing to remember is the FDA, the labels, all the information packets. The fillers do have a suggested length of duration, typically about 6, 9 to 12 months. And for the viewers and listeners out there, for if you're a patient, when you get an injected near an area or in an area of lots of movement, and really it's the lips or around the lips and the mouth, even if the label says it lasts 12 months, I found that it may not. Typically, it may last 11 or even 10 months because the more movement you have where you inject the HA filler, it will sort of be broken down and metabolized a little faster. I don't know what your experience has been.
100%. I tell patients, I think like deeper static structures, cheekbone augmentation, jawline, even tear troughs, those fillers seem to last longer, like even relative to the expected duration. And then around the mouth, think about during the course of this podcast, how much these areas are moving. So I think that does cause them to break down faster. The other thing to keep in mind is that it's not like after 12 months or 9 months, poof, all of the filler just suddenly dissipates. They are breaking down slowly over time. So it may be that at 6 months, when, you know, theoretically half of these fillers or many of them are gone, that might be the threshold where you really feel like you're due for a touch up, especially if it's your first time doing it and you had deeper wrinkles to begin with.
Yeah. And another thing you probably know, if you're a viewer or a listener out there, is we keep on emphasizing that HA fillers can be melted. It's a chemical called hyaluronidase. With a direct injection, you can actually melt HA fillers, hyaluronic acid, and it dissipates immediately. There may be a little swelling and more will dissipate over time. Interestingly, fat we can actually melt or slightly melt because we have Kybella chemical injection. We can inject it with steroid. And, you know, we both know, Dr. Hamilton, that with liposuction, fat grafting, pressure or direct pressure manipulation can actually cause the fat to be absorbed by the body. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where you felt like you had to have the fat broken down faster, be absorbed in your patients. I really haven't had that to a large extent.
In terms of the fat breaking down faster?
Right.
Yeah, it seems to be very durable. And I just tell patients, you know, it's fat. It's going to act like the fat from whence it came. So if you got it from your inner thighs or your abdomen, it's, you know, it can grow or shrink with you. So that's another thing to consider. Are you someone who's fairly stable in their weight, because you wouldn't want to do significant fat transfers anywhere and then have big fluctuations depending on your diet and exercise regimen at the time. But overall, for most people that are, you know, stay relatively within, you know, 5 or 10 pounds of their normal weight, I think that's a great option.
Yeah. So did you want to talk about any other filler or any other topic about this introduction to really pretty much all the fillers that are available in the United States?
I wanted to leave the viewers just with the consideration of when you're thinking about what to go in and ask for. So I usually like to start by just asking patients, like, what do they see? Like, what are, you know, is it these lines? Is it these lines? Like, what is it they're seeing? Or just like overall, like I wake up and I just don't feel as refreshed as my usual self. Then for neuromodulators, that's usually where we start, just because I think those are the simplest and lowest commitment for patients who've never done anything for the first time. And you can raise your brows with those, soften lines in the upper third. And then oftentimes people point, they're like, oh, well, what about a little bit of Botox here? Keep in mind, how do I make that wrinkle? By smiling. So I have to be willing to get rid of the movement associated with it if I want to use Botox in those areas. So I'm not willing to Botox my smile or someone else's smile. So that's when we start moving to filler or even lasers for some of these other areas. But we can really sculpt and optimize and just enhance your own natural beauty by sculpting, and it can be small amounts, but this is really the art of plastic surgery and aesthetic medicine. And so I encourage patients, you know, look at their doctor, look at their doctor's staff, look at their patients. My work, Dr. Kim, you do beautiful work. You're going to be adopting, as much as we're listening to you to get a sense of your aesthetic, we also have a personal bias of what, you know, what Dr. Kim finds beautiful, what I find beautiful. And so keep that in mind, because you're likely to walk out with that aesthetic. So if you see lips that are too big or cheekbones that are too full, just consider that might be the look that you will walk out with too. So I think that's a good litmus test for any office.
I totally agree. And this is sort of one thing that you alluded to. You have to have a holistic approach. So in other words, sometimes I have patients who say, you know, I really don't like my worry lines. Well, I can knock those down. I can make them look great. If you have worry lines in your forehead, if you have other lines that are complementary, just knocking out or making one area look good works, but you have to look at the whole forehead. And this is also true of fillers. In other words, I think the companies sometimes emphasize a little too much, maybe the lips or maybe the nasolabial fold. I do think that patients do better if they have a more holistic approach with someone like you, who's going to be looking at everything and saying, you know, you don't need like a ton of syringes just in one area. Let me give you an overall assessment, and then let me give you a little here, a little there, so that overall, your face is going to look fantastic. It's going to bring out your own inner beauty. So anyway, Dr. Hamilton, I think we sort of wrapped up this episode. Do you have any other questions for me at all or any other comments?
No, I completely agree with your philosophy as well. I think you need to respect the individual's facial anatomy, respect their own natural beauty, really use this game of millimeters to enhance and really complement your patient's face. And that's a very individualized treatment plan. And I think done correctly, non-surgical treatment with injectables is really, really beautiful and can be maintained over years and decades with a lovely result. And I think they're great products.
So anyway, Dr. Hamilton, thanks so much for joining me. And well, I'm looking forward to talking to you soon. And as always, to you and to all of our listeners, stay beautiful.
Stay beautiful.
Thank you for joining us on The Beauty Scientist. Be sure to visit thebeautyscientist.com and learn more about modern beauty and connect with Dr. Hamilton and Dr. Kim.